This is Tiger Cast, the official podcast of Princeton Athletics. Now here's your host, Craig Saxon.
Welcome to an NCAA Championships edition of Tiger Cast. On today's show, we will preview two teams that hopefully begin and continue their NCAA Championship journeys. On Thursday, we will have Miles Stevens, the MVP of the Ivy League basketball tournament last weekend, as he will lead the Princeton men's basketball team into today's NCAA tournament opener against Notre Dame. That's a 12:15 start on CBS. And then we'll have Chris Ayers, the head coach of the Ivy League runner-up in the Princeton wrestling team. Tigers sending seven to the NCAA championships. They also start Thursday morning. They'll go through Saturday night. Seven Tigers in competition there, including Matt Kolodzic, who's the fourth seed at 141 pounds. So some legitimate chances to actually make a little noise this weekend. And, you know, Kolodzic's got the ability to go far. We'll talk more about that for our interview with Coach Ayers. First, a quick look around the weekend. A lot going on. Spring break starts this weekend, so you'll see some teams kind of, you know, off in the distance. You know, consult GoPrincetonTigers.com for full information. We'll hit a couple of the bigger events. Friday night in Jadwin, the women's basketball team coming off their second place finish at the Ivy Tournament. They'll start the WNIT against Villanova. That's a 6 p.m. start, as I mentioned, in Jadwin. Women's water polo, big test this weekend as they head west. They'll take on a couple of teams within the top 15 on Saturday, including a game against number 6 Arizona State. Also take on number 12 San Diego State. So, you know, competition not quite as high, obviously, out east. But this team will really get some tests this weekend. Obviously, the senior season of Ashley Johnson. Men's lacrosse will begin their Ivy League season Saturday at Penn. That's a 3 p.m. start. Baseball, softball, so on the road. As I said, please check GoPrincetonTigers.com for full information. All right, let's get to our interviews, and we're going to start with Miles Stevens and what a run he has been on. This whole team has been on, certainly. Tigers running the table in the Ivy League, going to the Ivy League tournament, and look, if you followed it all, you know what they went through last weekend in that semifinal against Penn. It was Stevens who had that tip-in right before, right at the end of regulation to force overtime. Obviously, they took control in overtime. Stevens was named the Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year, as well as the tournament MVP. And he's such an interesting player, such a well-rounded player. I mean, these are the kind of players that, you know, are so vital in the NBA these days. These two-way players, somebody who can, you know, who's got a little versatility on offense. I mean, can shoot, can rebound, can post up, you know, does a lot. And then defensively, you just put him on the opponent's best player and let him go to work. And, you know, if you're an NBA fan, you know, a comp would be a Kawhi Leonard type player. Now, obviously, not at that level. But somebody who can impact the game in so many ways, both that you'll see on the stat sheet, but that you won't see on the stat sheet too. You know, when you talk about just kind of taking away the opposing team's best player. Now, you know, how Princeton matches up with Notre Dame, I mean, look, we'll find out, you know, in a few hours. This is the first game of the NCAA tournament. It's certainly a tough draw. You know, you saw Notre Dame get to the ACC final and really kind of put a scare into Duke for about 30, 35 minutes before Jason Tatum took that game over. But, you know, this is a good Notre Dame team, but it's a good Princeton team. And I think that if you look at kind of the way they play that Saturday game, you know, I think you'd be lying if you said there wasn't an inordinate amount of pressure on Princeton this past weekend. To go 14-0 before the first ever Ivy tournament and then lose in the semifinal would be a really tough way to go out. And I think that, you know, if the team played a little tight, I think you could understand that. And I think that will certainly not be the case this weekend. They have, you know, achieved the major goals. And now, you know, you can kind of let it fly against a really high-level team. And, you know, you look at this Princeton team, and if their three-point shots are falling, you know, and they didn't fall until kind of midway through the second half against Yale, but if those shots are falling, this is a team that can do so many things. I mean, they can, you know, when you think about the traditional Princeton offense, I mean, they can run, you know, they can pass and cut and do all of that, but they have guys who can, you know, take it at you individually. You know, they can post up. They can shoot, obviously, you know, and then they can defend. I mean, you have a guy like Miles Stevens who can take somebody away. You know, it's a big advantage. So, really, it's going to come down to, can they get those three-point shots, and then can they at least impact Notre Dame's offense enough? You know, you're not going to shut down a team like Notre Dame, but, you know, can you make them work a little? Can you make them struggle? Can you make them feel the pressure that maybe you felt the previous Saturday against Penn? It's going to be a terrific matchup, a terrific game, and a terrific opportunity for a Princeton team that just flat-out earned it by going 16-0 in the Ivy League. Big part of that is our guest today. Let's hear now from Miles Stevens. Miles, I know you're about to board an airplane heading to Buffalo for the NCAAs. And, you know, obviously I want to talk about that game. But let's go kind of a little chronologically here from Saturday. That first game, obviously such a tense game. Did you guys feel like, you know, it was just one of the games where the shots weren't falling early? Or did you feel some nerves about, look, we're the top seed. We're supposed to do this. Like, what do you remember about the first 35 minutes of that game?
Of the Penn game?
Yes.
Well, going into the game, we knew it was going to be a challenge. Obviously, we were playing Penn at the Palestra, and I mean, it was nearly packed. The atmosphere was great. Penn came out hot. They played really well offensively and defensively. Our shots weren't falling in the first half, but we were able to stay in the game, only down to our half. I guess we did what we had to do, to an extent. We didn't play great, but we did enough. And, you know, beginning of the second half, I guess we came out a little sluggish again. They were still on fire, making plays on the defensive and the offensive end. And then I guess about 5 minutes into the, you know, the second half, we decided to, you know, we didn't want to lose. Like, we had to step it up. And I think that started on the defensive end. And people say, and our coach says always, you know, defense helps their offense out, and defense got us going offensively. And from there on out, it was a dogfight. And we had a bunch of guys that were able to make plays down the stretch, huge plays for us. They kept us in the game. And I think that's what helped us get into overtime. And then in overtime, I guess we were able to pull it out.
You know, you have obviously the huge tip in that you know, ties it at the end of regulation. And you know, that's a basketball play. You've probably done that play thousands of times, but not in that moment and not with what's at stake. As that play is unfolding, is it just basketball then? Or do you have a sense of, you know, the moment and how big this is and you know, how important this particular basket is, or is it really just basketball at the moment?
I mean, obviously it's a big moment, but at the same time, it's just basketball. The play was Amir get the ball, go to the rim, and I told Amir right before he did that, I said, get the ball up on the rim, and I'll go for the offensive rebound. I mean, that's what he did. I followed him, and, you know, when it's a big shot like that, a lot of people just turn their heads to the basket. And I was able to get a clear run at the rim and get a fairly easy tip in to tie the game up.
Could you feel it once you went to the bench to start overtime that, you know, sure, it's a tie game, it's 5 minutes, but did you feel like momentum was now squarely on your side?
I definitely felt like we'd been given a new life, almost like a second chance. And then at that point, you know, we were saying in the huddle, like, we've come this far, we've come this obstacle. We can't look back now. We can't lose it now. Being down 10 with however much time was left in a jam-packed Palestra, you know, we'd overcome that much. And I think at that moment we were like, we can't go back. We can't go back now.
You get to Sunday and Yale, and, you know, it's a pretty tight game for maybe 25 minutes and you start to pull away. And then there seemed like a spurt of about 5 to maybe 8 minutes in the second half where it looked like what it looked like so often during the regular season, that you were kind of exerting your will on the defensive end, and then you're moving the ball and you're finding the open shooter and the shot is going in. Could you feel it? Could you feel like this is it? This is the way we've played to get to 14-0, to get to this final, and it's starting to click again?
I'd be lying if I said no. So I think that, like I said before, defensively, when you're locked in on defense, it creates offense. And then a lot of it, we're really deep, like 5, 1 through 5, all of us can create shots, and then we're really confident in each other, so we're able to find each other and put each other in different places where we're able to make plays. Luckily we were able to make shots going down the stretch in that game, which kind of opened it up for us. But like I said before, I'm just going to reiterate, we all have the utmost confidence in each other, and that just helps us to put each other in the position to make those big plays down the stretch.
For years, decades, Princeton basketball was looked at as a bunch of interchangeable players all running, doing the same thing, running, the Princeton offense. And this team, seems to have so many different guys with varying skills. And you certainly, fit that bill in terms of somebody offensively who is athletic enough to create but can also post up, obviously rebound, and then defensively can lock down on the top defender. I mean, top offensive player. And that's obvious in the player, defensive player of the year honor. Is there one aspect of your game that you either enjoy the most or take the most pride in, or have been pleased with the amount of improvement and growth you've made this year?
Well, I kind of answer that in two ways. I've always prided myself on the defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
Just because before I had any offensive skill or really anything else, any other part of my game developed, I was just a defensive stopper. That started in middle school. But I'd also say that one part of my game that, I've improved on is my outside shooting. And I think that's helped me become a better overall player. It's improving my outside shooting because it makes defenders, respect the outside shot where I'm able to get to the rim, or maybe shoot a jump shot if they're too far back. But that's definitely one place I'm happy with my improvement.
Before we get to NCAAs, you grew up, I'm sure, watching championship week and these games and the incredible celebrations afterwards. And now that you got to be a part of it, how was it? How was the experience? Did it live up to what you hoped it would be?
Oh yeah, it was an awesome moment. We had a bunch of students there. I think we had two busfuls of students, and they stormed the court. It was crazy. The media, like the cameras that were around us, as a confetti, cutting the nets with the crowd behind us. It was an awesome moment. And I think it definitely lived up to the moment, but I think we don't want to take it for granted because we still have work that we want to do coming up on Thursday. But it was definitely a moment that we'll all remember.
You play at noon and you get to celebrate, and then you get the selection show, and then all of a sudden there's this big snowstorm and you got to kind of figure out how to get out to Buffalo quickly. You have the first game on Thursday. In some ways, it feels like it's all compressed really tightly. But maybe that's a good thing. Do you feel like, let's just keep rolling here?
Definitely. It's definitely compressed. We have midterms this week. This is our midterm week, so we're working with deans to get, that straight now with professors. So that's another thing kind of bogging us down. But we're used to juggling a lot of things. And like I said before, we're up to the challenge. And we're excited to play on Thursday, get out to Buffalo. A little early, a day early, actually. But we're excited to play and see, if we can make some noise.
We're taping this Monday afternoon or early evening. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of time to study up on Notre Dame over the next couple days. And so I'm not going to ask a lot about Notre Dame, but you're going to the NCAA tournament, something you've watched I'm sure, a million times. How much do you look forward to the moment, and how do you separate the excitement of being there with the fact that you're a good team that has a chance to really do something special? You know, is it tough to kind of block those two out, or how do you expect to kind of handle that moment?
Yeah. So our coach Henderson, he's been there three times before. And he told us, you know, this would be one of the best times of our playing careers. And I can see why, the excitement around it, the buzz around the tournament, you know, the possibility of like the Cinderella stories that you hear. Mm-hmm. But, at the end of the day, you know, we're a basketball team and we're here to win games. And, you know, when we step on the court, I think that goes away, and it comes down to the X's and O's, and you know, we're here to win. We're not here to you know, be happy in the moment. We're here to win, and that's what it comes down to.
Now we will talk to Chris Ayers, and you know, Chris is somebody that I've worked with wrestling my whole time at Princeton. I've known Chris now since, you know, 2006. I've seen how far this program has come, and this opportunity is really a special one, and one that, you know, he and his terrific coaching staff and coaches before and the guys obviously have earned. Sending seven wrestlers to NCAAs is a major thing. And you look at the fact that Cornell is sending six, that Lehigh is sending seven. You're right there with those teams and with some of the other best in the country. And, you know, you also have somebody who is a legitimate national contender in Matthew Kolodzic. You know, the rest of Princeton's field can make noise, no doubt. Brett Hartner went here last year and earned All-American. He's been banged up this year, but, you know, if he's healthy this weekend and opens up in that first match, he could be somebody scary. Jordan Laster, I've watched for 4 years. This is the best he's ever wrestled. He's going to go in with a ton of confidence on an 11-match win streak. He's going to be really interesting. It's going to be a fun tournament, but you know, when it's all said and done, the performance of Matthew Kolodzic is the one that most Princeton fans are going to take note of, because really, you know, when I say, and look, NCAAs, crazy things happen. Four seeds lose in the first round. You know, it happens. He's wrestling a guy from Maryland who took out some seeded guys at the Big Ten tournament this past week, 2 weeks ago. So things happen, but Kolodzic's got the opportunity to set up what really could be an incredible Friday. And I know he won't look ahead. Chris Ayers won't look ahead. But if it shows up on Friday, if seeds hold, he would have a quarterfinal against Anthony Ashnall, the Rutgers standout, who those two wrestled at the beginning of the year at High Point Stadium. Kolodzic scored a takedown in the final seconds to win that. You know, that's going to be a really, really hard match against a veteran and All-American in Ashnall. But, you know, if you're allowing yourself to dream, you could look at the next step and possibly a semifinal match on ESPN against, you know, possibly the reigning national champion in Dean Heil. I mean, look, there's a lot that can happen. It always things always do happen, and that's the beauty of this weekend. But, you know, the fact that Princeton's in this conversation is a testament to our next guest. He's done an incredible job. He's the two-time reigning Ivy League Coach of the Year, earned EIWA Co-Coach of the Year honors 2 weeks ago. Now he's going to send seven guys to the NCAA championships. Let's hear now from Chris Ayers. Chris, we've talked plenty about the Ivy season and about EIWA, so let's really focus here on St. Louis and NCAAs. And I know you know, the first question out of everybody's mind is going to be surrounding Kolodzic and just how ready he is. I mean, when you looked at him, when you recruited him, you knew this was somebody who could go out and compete at this level. When you see him right now, does he look like somebody who could legitimately go out and win an NCAA championship this week?
Absolutely. The culmination of everything he's done since he arrived at Princeton. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. The kid can beat the toughest of opponents, the top level guys. So I absolutely, in my mind, and I think in his mind too, I think an NCAA title is in line, and he can do it.
You know, you look at his result. I mean, 26-2 EIWA champion, Ivy Rookie of the Year, Ivy, you know,
everything, the results are clear, but you see him day to day. Why? Why is he so good?
Consistency. When he has his life in order in terms of his schedule and his training, he does the right things to put himself in position to have the confidence. Really, that's what it really boils down, the confidence to win those big matches. He bothers us as coaches to get more time in and do the things that he needs to do to be a national champion. So I think it's just a matter of like his consistency in doing the right things in the day to day.
You know, it's almost funny to be talking to you and talk and start looking past certain rounds. So obviously every we've seen it every year at NCAAs. I mean, upsets happen, but if you project forwards, he could have this incredible Friday with another match with Ashnault in quarters, and then, you know, potentially wrestling the NCAA champion in Dean Heil. I mean, everybody else can look that way, but are you confident in his ability to just kind of focus on, look, I got the Ryan Deal from Maryland in round one, and I'm taking that, and then we'll go from there?
Yeah, these guys have done this for a long time, all these guys on this team, and one thing they've heard a lot from coaches is you can't look past the first guy. So I absolutely don't think there's anything on his mind except for the first guy. And for me personally, I'm not looking past that either. I just know how these tournaments go, and you've seen it happen time and time again. It's going to blow up. It's going to start to blow up Thursday and Friday, and things aren't going to go the way they're laid out to go. So we're ready for match one, and that's what we're focused on. And there's no way he's looking ahead at all. He's just been in this game for too long and has had too much success to kind of make one of those errors.
Laster, it's his third trip, but he's never gone quite like this on an 11 match win streak, you know, seeded. He could potentially, and again, not looking ahead, but he could potentially have that really tough Thursday night against Zane Rutherford. But when you look at how he's wrestling, is this the best Jordan you've seen going into NCAAs?
Absolutely. I've been saying this publicly. I mean, when I sit in his corner, I'm the calmest of anyone on our team. I feel like there's just something about him, an aura that he is ready to win. And he's confident. It's like a lifetime of his work in the sport is coming together right now. And then I keep whispering to him over his shoulder. I was like, they don't know what you're capable of in relation to the Rutherford match. And I love it. I mean, it's like, hey, be that guy that really shakes things up. He can put himself in a position to beat him. That kid's been in some close matches this year. He's going to overtime a couple times. So I think Jordan's ready to do something big, and this is his moment.
One person that people do know what he is capable of is Brett Harner, is your returning All-American. And, you know, look, people can talk about him not qualifying his spot and having to earn the at-large spot, but he was also in, you know, a second tiebreaker against the guy who ends up winning EIWAs. I mean, he was right there, and he's going into it against a guy who's wrestled three times in the last 2 years and somebody that, you know, he's either lost in overtime or he's pinned. I mean, I feel like he could be a real dark horse, even as a returning All-American, a real dark horse at that weight.
Yeah, I think people are kind of counting him out just because of his season. But if you look back on his career, he's always had some moments during the season where he hasn't competed great, in dual meets especially. This is what he's good at. I mean, he's good at postseason. And you mentioned the EIWAs. I think that match in the semis, you can go back and we can look at some things, but he really wrestled pretty good. He needs to open up a little bit more, but I love where he is in the bracket, and he knows how to do this. He knows how to win. He's from Pennsylvania. I mean, it's just one of those things. And I think too, he's been holding back a little bit just because he's been banged up, but this is his last tournament of his career. I don't think there's anything to hold back on. I think he's going to open up and do well.
You have seven guys, and we could go through them all. But the one other one that I want to talk about, and the one that really opened my eyes at EIWAs, was D'Angelo. He, you know, beats Lopez, who ends up seeded. You know, he pins the brown guy. He was in that match with Parsons. And now, moving forward, he's going to see him first round of EIWAs. he has a confidence to him that, you know, when he's wrestling well, he just looks like, he looks different than he looked even during the regular season. Even when a couple matches he was, you know, even the Bethea match he won, he didn't look as confident as he looked at EIWA's. Yeah. What has sparked?
That's a great question. I've seen this happen with guys before, and I talk about it's your improvement sometimes isn't gradual. You'll have these moments mm-hmm. in competition where it just clicks for some reason and you make a huge level jump. I think that's what we saw at the EIWAs. He's going to have to follow it up here with another performance similar to that. But if he can compete the way he did at EIWAs, I love this first match. I mean, he's right there in the match. If he could have escaped, you know, he's got a chance to beat that guy. So he's wrestling and he's in a great, great place right now mentally. So I'm just hoping we unleash him and he continues to keep it rolling. He's an interesting guy too. If you remember last year, he kind of exceeded his seed mm-hmm. last year too yep. in the postseason. So you say it was funny. He seemed different. He seemed different to me too, just even in practice and walking around now that we've entered the postseason. It's like he's got a mission in front of him and he just wants to get the job done. I gave him, it was either him or last year got MVP at EIWAs. I don't know which, but they're both those two guys are just pumping on all cylinders and I can't wait to see what he does for sure.
Big picture, you're a Lehigh grad. You coached at Lehigh. So you know what it's like to take a big group to NCAAs. And granted, you've taken five, you've taken four, but seven is that's a sizable number. There are major programs that don't have more than you. What, you know, besides kind of keeping you and your staff on their toes each session, what can it do for the guys to, you know, it's not just like seeing one other guy, you know, what can it do for them to have seven at this event?
It's huge. I mean, especially if things get rolling, they can feed off each other. And I've seen that happen where things just start, somebody starts winning and then it just catches fire throughout the whole team. What we've trained them to do though, is to kind of just focus on their own time on the mat. So we try to get them to not notice those things in case it goes bad. But I just feel like, you know, not during the rut, just like walking around here, it's like, hey, we need three rental vans instead of one. It's pretty cool to have those things going on. What I also think is really important, and I really think it sends a message to everyone who's back home. I mean, you know, there's some guys who aren't here, and there's not many of them. So I think it might be a lot. It might even be better for the motivation of our guys who are not here. But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty fun right now because we just got a lot of guys to everything we do. So it's good. It's awesome.
TigerCast is a production of the Princeton University Athletic Department. You can subscribe to TigerCast on iTunes or catch new episodes every week by visiting goprincetontigers.com/TigerCast.